Thanks, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, I guess, and I'm right between lunch here, so this is good. Let's see, go ahead. I'm Tom Michelson, Chief Transition Director for BitPath. Next slide. Do I have a control here? I guess I do. Just push the top button. Oh, advance. There we go. Okay. Now I got it. No training here this morning. So, who's BitPath? You've probably heard of us. Maybe you've heard of us or not. We're technically owned by Sinclair and Nexstar. Sinclair's got 185 stations there, and Nexstar's got 200. So, two of the largest broadcasters in the United States, group owners, and we really work with them in helping facilitate ATSC3 throughout the United States and all of their broadcast markets. It's not necessarily limited to Sinclair and Nexstar. We work with a lot of market partners that we're very proud of. Gray, Scripps, Tegna, Hearst, Graham, Cox, ABC, NBC, CBS, Univision, Telemundo, Fox, Allen, Estrella, Morgan Murphy, Hubbard. So we really work with a lot of partners in launching all of these broadcast markets for ATSC3. But our ownership is primarily Sinclair and Nexstar. And, you know, that's our day job is to launch markets. That's our goal. Our mission, however, is to build a broadcast data network. So we're facilitating ATSC 3.0, but right now our job is to get these markets on the air, get the stations working, get everything functioning. But long term, we'll be building a national data broadcast network that's based upon a consortium of not only the Sinclair and Nexstar stations, but also all the other groups that I mentioned there are also market partners that will share in this process. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So, you know, what is, everybody's kind of been talking about this. What's ATSC3? It's the next generation of terrestrial broadcast. And it's a new IP system from the ground up. You know, we've got improved compression efficiency, better transmission, greater interaction, and it's really easily adaptable for these future technologies. So we really haven't talked about, you know, everybody says ATSC 3.0, and if you go look at, you know, what ATSC 3.0 is, it's really a set of standards. There are 30 different standards here that make up the ATSC 3.0, and some of them really haven't been touched on. So there's a lot of things that we'll talk about or just touch on, that, you know, two-way capability and interactive capability. So we're really just scratching the surface here of where we're going with the next generation. So again, key features build on IP backbone. You know, for all this, it's the same as all the streaming platforms that we use throughout our work and home lives. Bringing together over the air with over the top content, it really does deliver better quality, immersive audio to viewers, and provides the capability for advanced emergency alerting and informing. And we heard some of that yesterday from Sam Matheny. And it's very easily adaptable to future technology, primarily because we're no longer in the business of, you could say, digital transmission or analog transmission or just television. It's IP transmission. It's data transmission.
Television broadcasters are leading the way with a new system that will merge the capabilities of over-the-air broadcasting with the internet. 2 decades ago, the Advanced Television Systems Committee celebrated the FCC's adoption of the first all-digital over-the-air TV standard. It offered pristine, high-definition video delivered in the same 6 megahertz channel once needed for black and white, and then color TV. Now broadcasters are evolving to meet the needs of today's viewers and advertisers. This next-generation broadcast platform merges the best capabilities of over-the-air and broadband viewing. The result is a convergence of the most popular method of watching live events with the variety of programming available online. ATSC 3.0 is designed from the ground up to be all of those things. A next-generation transmission system that can deliver 4K Ultra HD images with high dynamic range, plus interactive features and multi-channel immersive audio. ATSC 3.0 is the world's first broadcast standard built on an internet protocol backbone. This offers the advantage of both broadcast and broadband. Designed to integrate with internet-delivered content, ATSC 3.0 will present viewers with more streams, more choices, more channels, and more flexibility. The system takes advantage of new technology with advanced video and audio compression and more robust modulation. Responding to the needs of broadcasters, this new broadcast platform is exceptionally robust, adaptable for single-frequency network transmission systems that can overcome physical challenges to deliver TV deep inside buildings and on the go. The result is better indoor reception and wide coverage for mobile devices. ATSC 3.0's advanced emergency alerting is designed to wake up sleeping devices, alert families of impending emergencies, and provide a rich variety of video, text, audio, and graphic information when it's needed most. New audience measurement tools come with ATSC 3.0, and the new system can also be a pipeline for delivering data to the car, to mobile devices, and to the home. ATSC 3.0 is built for a variety of receiving devices too. New gateway receivers will deliver over-the-air TV to existing tablets and smart TVs through Wi-Fi. Mobile devices and TV sets equipped with ATSC 3.0 receivers will make TV available virtually anywhere. That's all great news for viewers, who will find it easier than ever to tune in to live TV broadcasts anywhere, anytime. For advertisers, ATSC 3.0's advanced advertising features include interactive and ad-targeting capabilities in real time to the viewer. Best of all, ATSC 3.0 is designed from the ground up with a suite of standards that can be updated in the future. ATSC 3.0, a new broadcast platform that is flexible, adaptable, and focused on the future today.
So that, I think that's a nice, clean way to again reinforce where we're going with 3.0. Why the change? Of course, 1.0 has been around with us since the 90s. It's really been great for us. We've improved ATSC 1.0. There's been a lot of benefits there, but we've learned, and that's why when you say ATSC 3.0, what happened to ATSC 2.0? Well, that was really designed for to support mobile, and it didn't work. When mobile was available, we couldn't get a product out there. ATSC 1.0 does not work very well with the mobile environment, and we need to have products. The problem now with what's going on with broadband and cell phones today in the industry is that it's really a serious competitive threat to broadcasting, and our future as television broadcasters. So again, benefits, scalable, it is supporting mobile. We'll show some things about that. It supports 4K, UHD, high quality audio, enhanced audio, high dynamic range, and that's a big differentiator there too. Targeted content, future two-way, of course the IP-based standard, which is really the core of all of this. And it does offer something that we haven't got in 1.0, and that's signal signing and encryption, digital rights management. Those are all really important things for broadcasters to protect our content as we go forward. And certainly significant improved emergency alerting and information. That is something that is really going to be a big deal going forward, because it's a way to hopefully get some of this technology, really all of it, inside our cell phones. And with this advanced emergency and alerting system, that will allow our broadcasting to be able to be embedded in a lot of different products and be more valuable, and frankly, save lives and prevent loss of life. So, talking about how do we launch an ATSC 3.0 system in a market, and we really talk about this market sharing concept. It's about we stand up a lighthouse, and we've talked about this over the last couple days. As Sam talked about, we've got a 5-year dual illumination requirement by the FCC for putting 3.0 on the air, so we have to simulcast the 3.0 and the 1.0 content. So it generally means that the implementation requires an extra TV transmitter. So you've got to have people who are really committed to this, just not making a contribution, and that's really the difference here in getting these markets launched, is that it's being able to take, if you've got two sticks in the market or another partner in the market, to be able to take one of those stations off the air, and that's a big ask, is to take that station off the air and convert it to ATSC 3.0. So that's really, really important. So when you do that, then when we put the 3.0 up, then the 1.0 stations that are on that stick have to go somewhere. And now we're doing, for the first time, market sharing. So now we're asking the other stations in the market to carry the 1.0 services that have been on that 3.0 stick, or the new 3.0 stick. And really, overall, it's bringing a lot of the markets closer together, because so long you've got a competitor across the street, and sometimes they don't play well together. And now, frankly, that competitor is carrying your programming while you're standing up this new technology for the future. So the 1.0 services get shared across the participating stations, and thus for that share, those 1.0 stations then get a slot on the ATSC 3.0 service. And so that's a little bit of how it's done. So we're going to go through the building blocks now of all the different pieces it takes, to the roadmap, if you will, to get us going. There's some of them, and we'll talk about those specifically in the individual slides. So one of the things that we do is have a project management process, program management process for every market that we have. And typically for us, for BitPath, we're running a very fast run rate here. We do up to 9 meetings a week, so we have 9 markets in process every week as we're transitioning all of these things. The core, and this is not meant to be read, it's an eye chart. This is a readiness matrix, and so it's a spreadsheet that we developed that allows us to manage all of the variable pieces of the process here, and we'll go through those next. So the first one is going to be the partner and hosting agreements. So as you bring this together, you've got all the market partners. We've created an industry standard template generated by BitPath, and then now we've worked with Pearl, and we have a universal hosting agreement that's used by all of the stations and all the markets and broadcast groups in the United States. So if you launch a market in Albuquerque versus a market in Chicago, those legal agreements are the same. So when we're dealing with corporate entities and the lawyers, they're familiar with all the requirements every time. So every time it just gets a little bit easier. So those hosting agreements basically say, they're responsible for keeping their stations on the air and the transmitters well maintained and things like that. And in turn, they will carry the hosts 1.0, the 3.0 hosts 1.0 content, and in compensation or exchange, the 1.0, the partner, is going to get a slot on the 3.0, so they'll be on the ATSC 3.0 stick, certainly reviewed by all the corporate and legal teams and then executed. So we have a market channel plan, and this is what a market channel plan looks like. Sam had it a little bit nicer where the pieces were moving around. Ours is color-coded, but we use this for every one of our market launches and individual markets. But you can see in this, we're using Austin as an example for this presentation. You can see that Austin has two 3.0 hosts down there. I can't count them all, but I think there's five and three, five on one host and three on another. We don't go over six services on a host because we feel that the bit rate gets to be too reduced. And then you can see, like for instance, in the first lower left-hand column there, I can't read it, but the host is a blue, light blue, and then you can see that their 1.0 services are being carried by the station in the first column and the station in the second column and the station in the third column. And then for the second 3.0 host in the brownish orange is being carried by the one on the last over there on the far right. So that's what the channel plan looks like. We go in with this plan, we basically circulate it, have a conversation, people talk about it. Usually it doesn't change, but sometimes there'll be an affiliation that one group won't want a certain type of signal on a certain station, so we move those around for the convenience. As we're getting ready to plan this, obviously we have to take the signal from the 3.0 and get it over to these 1.0 stations, and then likewise the 1.0 stations have to get a signal in the market back over to the 3.0 host. So that's done with a variety of types of connectivity. I would say we use a lot of LTN Global, managed services organization. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with that. That is kind of an OpEx model. And after the 5 years, that could go away. They'll pull that down. Same thing, we've got VideoFlow. That's more of a CapEx program where you buy the actual encode, decode hardware and put it out in the stations. And then we do have microwave and fiber options. I will say that probably of all the stations that we've launched, we've maybe only got two markets that are microwave, short-haul microwave, and those are only because those stations are in a downtown area and you can get away with a short-haul microwave that would be more cost-effective than it would be any other way. And then fiber, again, we've got a fiber market in Portland because they have such a great fiber interconnect, and they've chosen to use fiber for their distribution with market connectivity. But generally speaking, it's LTN or video flow in terms of getting the signals around town. Connectivity plan looks like this. We'll build this out, and you can see basically the signals are going in there. We move the signals from the 1.0 hosts over the 3.0 hosts. If they're being retransmitted, they're typically 20 megabit MPEG-4 for all of our services. In a lot of cases, if you've got co-located stations, they're going to be connected internally with tie lines, HDSTI. It's obviously more convenient and cheaper. So as we build out in our process of looking at our matrix of all the things, the checklist that we need to go through and turn all those items green, we've got a modcod, a modulation encoding scheme. Mike may talk about it a little bit more later this afternoon, but this is essentially the forward error correction and the coding. The type of QAM modulation that we would use, 256 or 64 QAM. We have used 16 QAM for mobile in some markets. And there off to the right, you can see the bandwidth allocation and the bit rate. And we calculate all that And that information then is actually programmed by into our encoders for the format. So the schedule to launch a market takes about 90 days at a minimum to transition. Actually, we have to have the MVPD notifications now post repack. It used to be 120 days, now it's 90 days. So we have to send by letter to the MVPDs to tell them that we're going to be making a conversion, very much like repack. Ironically, we find that even after 90 days, when we get ready to call the MVPDs, we're saying, well, we're going to be converting next week, and we'd like to have our local chief engineers call the MVPDs in the market, and they go, oh, I don't know anything about this. And so it's kind of a little bit of a scramble, but unfortunately, that information doesn't make it down from corporate MVPDs, Comcast, or whoever, Charter, and so we end up working very much on a local level to make sure that, because it's important, because they're carrying all of our signals, it's important that they know and they're ready for the transition. So we do a lot to cater to the MVPDs to make sure that they're prepared and properly informed. So again, back to we were talking earlier, we've got the agreements. It takes a while. The agreements really don't come together until the very end of the process of the 90 days, just for whatever administrative convenience, I think, those things just don't move through the system quite as well. We do have to file the FCC 2100 submittals and approvals. When we do that, we have to have the hosting agreements attached to the Form 2100 so that the FCC is aware that we've got all of the legal stuff taken care of. And then 30 days prior to launch on the 3.0, we begin a market crawl that begins to inform the viewers that that TV station is now transitioning to a 1.0, and that 3.0 lighthouse will be no longer on 1.0. And it's really been pretty smooth, I must say. We don't have too many problems or frankly too many calls, especially if we make the transition with the MVPDs, that goes pretty smoothly. So we'll talk a little bit about nuts and bolts. Mike Schmidt will talk a little bit more about what's under the hood, but this is just kind of the high level look at some of the things that we go through on the call. Certainly the bill of materials, that's very important. We'll have a spreadsheet up here in just a little bit so you can see this, but you know, what's it take for the 3.0 to transition? You've got to have an encoder and a packager. You have to have a broadcast gateway that'll handle all the guide data and so on. We require an NTP or GPS reference for the 3.0. And typically, we find that in all of the markets, the connectivity between the studio and the transmitter has to be IP. You can't have a legacy analog system anymore or an older system. It's got to be IP. And around 35 megabits of bandwidth is the minimum capacity that it takes to support a digital STL. And then, of course, 3.0 IP and RF analysis equipment. We're used to looking at the 1.0 signal, and if you've got a stream scope, you can upgrade your existing stream scope. There's a lot of other tools out there that are available that you can do to look at your 3.0 signal. They're becoming more and more standard in the industry right now as 3.0 begins to pick up more steam. Certainly, 3.0 IP and RF IRDs, DMODs. We always like to have a consumer TV in the package that's going to the 3.0 stations because that's what the consumers are watching. And early on, it was a little bit of a hassle because not all 3.0 TVs are the same. It's so early that they didn't all work the same, difference between Sony and LG and Samsung. That's not so much the case anymore. They've worked out all those issues. And then, of course, earlier, the IP interconnect between the stations. Those are all things that have to be accounted for, and there's typically a budget assigned to that, some costs associated with that. So signal flow diagram, here's a little block diagram off to the right that talks about in the bigger box, you've got the encoder packager, the route server, and the broadcast gateway. That's kind of all the meat of everything that goes on. And of course, those are a couple PCs and pizza boxes here anymore. And then off to the right, you've got your DMODs and your stream scopes and so on to monitor the signal. So it's pretty straightforward. The budgetary estimate, you know, if in order to launch a 3.0 station, you know, it could be, you know, $1.5 million to buy a new transmitter and all the hardware that you need to put it in. The encoder packagers are maybe $50,000. The gateways are in the $60,000 to $70,000 neighborhood. Monitoring equipment, if you buy, new stream scopes and IRDs, TVs, those kind of things, there's some budget they have to set aside there. Miscellaneous equipment, we have to think about what you're doing with Nielsen. If early on you'd have to buy ROS cards to encapsulate the Nielsen SID into the stream, into the IP stream. Now a lot of that's being done by the encoders, so we've been able to eliminate that piece of hardware. Of course, GPS and NTP timing. IPSTL is a big package because you have to have the IP to get the STL to get it to the transmitter. And then the video flow is a capital investment for encoding and decoding hardware. And then, of course, if it's LTN, then you've got a monthly allocation. And then we'll talk about it a little bit later, but signal signing, DRM, there are some costs going forward for that as an OPEX. So the budgetary estimate, again, eye chart, but basically, I need to put a magnifying glass down there at the bottom, but you're probably looking at, without a transmitter, you're probably looking at about $250,000 budget to launch a 3.0 in a market for the 3.0 host. And on the 1.0 host side, it's about $55,000 to $60,000, where you need to typically, most of the 1.0 hosts upgrade their 1.0 encoders to handle more channels. And if they've got a new one, then it's a lot cheaper. It's just a license. And as we get closer to launch, of course, I call it DOT, Day of Transmission, DOT. So we have, before we get ready to launch a market, the week before, of course, we're going through all of these checklists as we work our way to that end activity of launching a station. So about a week before we make the transition, we go through a pre-check process, kind of a go, no-go meeting. And is everybody ready to go? Yes, no. Has everybody got their Form 2100 filed? And where's the FCC? Has the FCC given us our grants and those types of things? So we go through all that process. Then we've got the day of transition. This activity takes about 3 hours for us to launch a market. So we'll go through the pre-checks again and make sure everybody's good. About an hour before we make the transition, which is always 10 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. We never do anything on Monday, and never do anything on Friday, if at all possible. We have launched stuff on Mondays, but we like to stay away from Mondays and Fridays, obviously, for obvious reasons that you all know about. So, and we launch it at an hour before we go into a dual illumination mode. So when we do that, there are two 1.0s that show up in your PSIP display for every market. So we can go in then, everybody turns on the host 1.0 PSIP, and the lighthouse is still acting as a 1.0. So we're able to make that transition, which allows it to be seamless. people can rescan then, but most importantly, it's for the cable company to let them know that they can receive the other signal off the air the new 1.0 host. And then at the top of the hour at 10 o'clock, of course, we drop the 3.0 transmitter. In some cases, we have stations that they can do a straight cut, but in many cases with the Rodian Schwartz platform, they do not support dissimilar software in the primary and backup exciter. So we actually have to take it off the air, load new software in the primary exciter, and load new software into the backup exciter, and then come on the air, because it's just a configuration of the way the exciter works. And then we go through a typical set of post checks, if you will, to make sure all of the essence is on there and functioning, and we can declare victory. So, you know, where are we? Where's BitPath today? We're at 41 markets launched through September 27th, and I can't even read that. But of course, the nationwide we're at about 52%, but nationwide for BitPath, we represent 42% of all market launches. This is the slide, a repeat of the slide that Sam shared with us yesterday, which was very good. And thanks to Sam for sharing this slide with me. But right now we've got 287 channels on the air, 68 stations, 55 markets, which is about 52%. I don't know if I've got another slide up there, but if I go back, no, I don't. BitPath, we have 215 stations on the air that we've launched just by ourselves. So, you know, we're very, very proud that we can, there's 210 stations. So as of the 27th, here's the list of all the stations that BitPath has on the air for 3.0. And obviously a lot of work by a lot of people, a lot of stations, and a lot of partners. So we're going to end the year here with about 47 markets. We've got Wichita ready to launch, Honolulu, Birmingham, Chattanooga, Dayton, and Albuquerque. We'll end the year with 47 markets on the air. Just a little bit about consumer devices. Again, Sam talked about that, and normally I don't have the opportunity of having Sam before us or even in the presentations when I give these. So we like to touch on the TV sets that are out there. Obviously, there's more and more sets that are coming up. That's what he talked about. The primary ones are Samsung, Sony, LG. There are others out there, the other brands that are not there. And if you want to look at that, it's watchnextgentv.com. It'll take you to the market map that is hosted by Pearl. We work with them, and you can see where all the current and future stations are being launched, as well as if you're interested in a 3.0 set, or you've got consumers that are interested in 3.0 sets, you can point them toward this next-gen website, and they can get a lot of information and basically help take the load off you. If you're, you know, like all of us early on, you don't want to commit to a 3.0 set, or maybe you have, but you want to begin to experiment with it if it's available in your market. A great option is HD Home Run by Silicon Dust for $199. They've got a great product. They've also got an advanced product that has some test equipment built into it. You pay a little bit more money for it. So they've got some good options there. They've been a good partner for just tuner only. I don't think Tableau has a tuner. I know that there's an Israeli company called VBox, and we've seen them out there, and we've tested those, and they're good too. So those are some lower cost options there with the Silicon Dust. So as we continue on, now we're on the air, we have not implemented A3SA yet, and that stands for ATSC 3 Security Authority. This is the item that's very important to us. There's been, you know, throughout the broadcasting history, there's been, I think it's Aerial TV that tried to do some things in New York City, basically retransmission without compensation for the broadcasters. This kind of thing continues to improve and significantly improve the station's ability, the network's ability to protect the signal that's getting transmitted over the air. There's some details on here. We go through a process of a public and private key. We work with DigiCert through Eonte, and that is all set up through the scheduler gateway, and we get to transmit those keys. Currently, the status on A3SA is that we were looking for a sunrise event this year. There has been some issues with TV testing and qualifications. Those are getting worked out, getting A3SA turned on. There are several markets that have A3SA turned on, but it is a do no harm environment where it's on, but it's not enforced, so the TV continues to function whether it's present or not. And then sometime in 2023, we would expect that we'll have a high noon event in which if you don't have a A3SA certification or a key on your set, your ATSC TV decoder will not receive the signal. So that, again, is protecting us. And then there's another layer of that for digital rights management, and we haven't implemented any of that. So reference materials, Sam had this up too. This is really important. We've gone through several iterations here of the ATSC 3.0 Station Lighthouse. This is a really good host manual. If you don't have it, there's the website. You can download it for free. And then, of course, the ATSC standards. But the host manual is really good. It has a lot of practices in there. You don't have to follow them all, but it is a good guideline that Pearl has created, and certainly you should think about getting the manual. It's free. And then once we launch a station, or we're getting ready to launch a station, there are a lot of next-generation marketing materials that's supported by Pearl, and if you could play that video for us.
The future of television has arrived. NextGen TV is here, and broadcast television will never be the same. Immerse yourself in stunning video with brilliant color, sharper images, and deeper contrast that'll make you feel like you're really there. Feel the power of movie theater quality sound that lets you hear every voice clearly and offers consistent volume across channels, enhanced with internet content to get the most out of live sports, live news, live events, and more in real time. And with NextGen TV, the TV you buy today is designed to be upgradable with the advancements of tomorrow. Make sure your next television comes built with the unlimited possibilities of NextGen TV. The future of television has arrived. Learn more at watchnextgentv.com.
So that's there's a whole host of marketing materials that are available to stations in the market once they launch. There's a web campaign, there's a print campaign, there's a video campaign. So it's all out there, it's all prepackaged, ready to go after we launch a market, and then point everybody here to this site. Here's my contact information if you need to get a hold of me. Always available to talk and help launch your station and any other questions about ATSC 3. Questions? A couple hands there.
What's to stop this transition from turning into what happened to HD radio all over again? I mean, without a federal mandate, what stops our currently loyal viewers, who are probably, let's be honest, not the type of folks sprinting to Best Buy with the latest tech, from completely abandoning broadcast altogether for other options when we sunset 1.0. This is a huge investment being asked of already cash-strapped stations and viewers. To artificially induce a major shakeup in tech seems like a big, expensive gamble, particularly without a federal mandate.
I think I understand the question is why do we want to go forward, right? And I think that, you know, we have to make a change. And, you know, right now, you look, I don't have all the specifics or the marketing data, but the impact of internet, cellular phones, mobile media is heavy, and not only that, but broadband, cable TV, and now over the top is having a significant impact on television broadcasters. And we do not have tools in our stations to compete with those things. And so ATSC3 is going to give us those tools, and it will, as we talked about, is going to help future-proof us as we go forward, make the conversion from ATSC 1.0, which is essentially, you know, it is digital broadcast, but it's not upgradable, and making that transition to 3.0, which is an IP broadcast standard, which is what we're competing with.
Hey, Tom. Hi. Good morning. Thanks for joining us at the WBA conference.
Sure.
My name is Matthew Kramer, Director of Engineering at PBS Wisconsin. My question is, during the recent FCC open comment period, it appears there's broad interest by broadcasters to let the five-year simulcast...
Talk up just a little bit. It's hard to hear here.
Sure. I'll start over with the question. During the recent FCC open comment period, it appears there's broad interest by broadcasters to let the five-year simulcast rule sunset. I'm wondering what BitPath's position is on that question, and if the simulcast rule is sunset, how do you think that would affect BitPath's approach to ATSC3 adoption and rollout? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. I think that currently, Sam talked about it, that the NAB is working with FCC to lock in that five-year commitment for having the capability to sunset. And now this is just me talking, not representing anybody or our stations. Again, BitPath is a facilitator, and we're looking forward to transitioning these markets into building a data broadcast network. So we don't own any stations. Our ownerships and our partners in the markets own these stations. And so I think, and again, this is just kind of my guess of what'll happen, is that I don't think we want to disintermediate any of our consumers and our viewers. And Harvey has said this for a long time, is that, you know, we want to do no harm here so that we don't disintermediate any of our viewers in the market. So that's really important to us, is every viewer. I think there's some that will be maybe affected. If you've got an old CRT TV sitting out in the garage, that's probably not going to work anymore here pretty soon. It already isn't, but you have to have a tuner box or something associated with it. So what'll happen? My view of what I think will happen is that when we get all of the stations up in a 3.0 environment in a market, I believe that eventually we may have a 1.0 stick that would be the surviving one. And then what would happen is that would host all the remaining 1.0s, and which is really important because we already have the FCC capability, as Sam talked about the other day, that we can be in MPEG-4. The biggest problem with MPEG-2 is we can't heavily load the 1.0 platform. So with MPEG-4, we could probably load the majority of the major broadcasters on a 1.0 stick, and that could last for another possibly 5 years. So once you've made the transition to 3.0, you know, we've got our 5 years, might last another 5 years before they shut the 1.0 off. Anyway, just it's a concept. Don't know if that'll happen, but I think it's a possibility. Richard?
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Our network, we run two 720p HD streams and three standard def. So how many 4Ks can you run on 3.0 at one time?
Right now, there's with the current bandwidth allocation, good question, thank you. Right now, with the bandwidth allocation, you probably get a couple 4Ks on a channel. However, if you know, you follow any of the things that go on, keep hitting that, it go on in Hollywood and on the broadcast side, there's a lot of work that's gone on to look at picture evaluation, quality evaluation. So if you take a 4K set on one side of the room and you've got a 1080p on the other side of the room, but on the 1080p side, you turn on high dynamic range. The research has shown that most of the time, the consumers will always pick the high dynamic range set. So, you know, how viable is 4K going to be? I don't know, but we do know that high dynamic range is very viable and preferred by our viewers. So for us, it's about, you know, more channels up there. So I think that you will see probably more high quality 1080p with really good quality and good audio and all the other elements with high dynamic range versus a lot of 4K. There's not a lot of 4K out there now. There are content that's available on, you know, over the top, Netflix and things like that. But when you make the comparison, I think we'll see more loading at 1080p. And for those of you who've got it, or if you haven't, I can just say that when you see the signals on a newer smart TV, a 4K TV, but it's 1080p and we're broadcasting with HEVC, the pictures are really stunning. It's very, very good. And you're going, wow, I can't believe these pictures look so good with so little bandwidth, and that's with HEVC.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand the, you know, we have five program streams, which is five revenue streams, and to go to 3.0 and having a five-year dual illumination you're talking about, I'm just trying to understand how we're ever going to do that, because, you know, I mean, we're kind of unique in the market, but I came here to this conference to understand 3.0 a little better, and what exactly does that mean, and the TV sets. You know, I'm now envisioning new set-top boxes for 3.0 to plug into your old, you know, because I deal with a lot of elderly calls, you know, trying to receive programming and stuff, and I'm just kind of wowed, because to get to that next level, I don't know if I'll live to see it, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. It is a challenge. I mean, we always deal with elderly calls and people that are challenged with that. It's no different than you know, the folks who are challenged with their current cell phones or an iPhone versus an old flip phone. So it is a challenge for us as broadcasters to work with our consumers to make this transition to this new standard. But I think we'll get it. And we do have another hurdle here, just, you know, talking openly, and that is that we haven't seen a lot of progress with the cable companies in implementing implementation of ATSC 3.0. So they have yet to come up with a plan for that implementation. Any other questions? Oh, Harvey's got a question, a comment.
It's more of a comment.
Yeah.
People ask, why are we doing this? This broadcast is a very, very, very good question. I think the answer is, if we don't do it, ATSC 1 is going to be relegated to continuing to go down in viewership, because people depend on mobile and video, mobile video these feature sets that MATSC 1 just cannot support. We used to talk about folks, the viewer, the public does not want to dink around trying to receive the signal. And because of the limitations of ATSC 1, it's not a mobile or a portable standard service. So while we are not excited about these roadblocks that we have, if we don't do it as a broadcasting community, we're going to continue to lose market share every year. So that's why we decided to fund a BitPath and become a member of Pearl, because it's really vital that we all work together as broadcasters.
Thanks, Harvey. Any other questions? Okay, I think that's it.
Thank you, Tom.
You bet.